97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, good Wednesday morning. Welcome in. It's the 7th day of January. You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show. I'm Mark. That's Ethan sitting over there. Kim St. Ange just down the desk here from us, and Sue Thomas with your traffic. So glad to have you on this momentous day in the state of Missouri, because it's when the Missouri legislative session gets back underway. And this caught my attention this week as I was perusing the social media. It was this statement. The Missouri State Senate session starts on Wednesday, and tension and dysfunction expected again. How about that? Same thing over and over again, the definition of insanity, right? That was from my friend David Wassinger, the lieutenant governor of the state of Missouri, and we've got him on the air this morning. Mr. Lieutenant Governor, welcome back. How are you, sir?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing great. Happy New Year. We're off to a good start. Beautiful weather, and better than this time last year when I was about ready to get sworn in as lieutenant governor. So I've been in office for a little less than a year, so it's good. We're going to gavel in the Senate at noon today and let the fireworks start.
Yeah, that's true. I was down there. It was freezing that day of the inauguration last year, for sure. But it's great to have you on. And yeah, I noticed your post here. You're expecting the same thing, the same dysfunctionality again, because we know the lobbyists and the special interests have been working hard all year long to oppose any change, right?
That's correct. You know, this is, it's fondly referred to as most Missourians as the Jefferson City Swamp. And I think that's a apt description of this place. You know, big part of the problem, Mark, is I can sit there and I've had a front row view over the last year. So my perception that the place is dysfunctional, and I think most people think the place is dysfunctional. It is dysfunctional. I watched it. And a big part of the problem is the lack of transparency that we have in Missouri Senate. So the Missouri House side is actually televised. You have a live stream. We are one of two states that does not have a live video of floor proceedings. So all this is done under the cloak of darkness, where all this dysfunction, all the acrimony, all the insanity that takes place on the Senate floor, none of that is our great Missourians can see it. If they saw what was taking place on the Senate floor over the course of this legislative session, they'd be fit to be tied. We are one of two states that do not provide a live video of floor proceedings. 43 of 50 states archive the proceedings on a website. 44 of 50 states provide live video of committee work. 25 states, provide live streams on public television. Missouri is the only one to go 0 for 5 in these measures. It may be the most least transparent upper chamber in the country by objective neutral standards by the National Conference of State Legislatures. So the swamp are the lobbyists, the career politicians, the special interests. They do all this stuff under the cloak of darkness so the Missourians can't see what's taking place in the Missouri Senate. So it just happens over and over again. The same old routine. They don't want change in Jefferson City, and they don't want Missourians to see what's taking place on the Senate floor so the Missourians can call for the change that's needed.
And I laugh, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, because they don't like to be told that either. They don't like it to be pointed out. You went to the Senate floor last year. You pointed out some of these things that needed to be changed, and you took a lot of grief for that.
Absolutely. The swamp fights back. These people are vicious. They do not want change. The lobbyists, special interest, and career politicians. I feel a little like the guy. Have you ever seen the movie Caddyshack with Rodney Dangerfield?
Of course.
Where he breaks into the country club and all the people, the waiters love him, the groundskeepers love him, but the actual people in the club themselves stick their nose up at him and,
yes,
and think he's a rube. That's how I feel. You come in, you may have more common sense. You may have be more successful. So I'm a little like the guy in Caddyshack, where I come in where the people in the bottom of the Capitol, the garage, people working in the garage, the Capitol Police, the doormen that are actually working for a living. Those people absolutely love me, but, the lobbyists and special interests, I don't know if they like me much.
Lots of Ted Knight clones down there, apparently, from what you're describing.
That's a very apt description.
And I think the average Missourian sits here, especially on the first day of the session, and thinks, wow, we have, 5 months? We're one of the longest time periods that a state legislature is in session. And we think, property taxes and all these things are going to get done. And then it comes to an end and we're thinking, none of that got done. I mean, what do you feasibly think will actually could get accomplished this session?
Well, here's what's accomplished. And this is no particular senator. So this goes on for far too long, 5 months. So they will have a spring break in March. All right. So the first from now until spring break, they'll be going out partying with the lobbyists and special interests for the first 2.5 months. I don't know if one bill will get passed between now and spring break. So this could be shortened to, as most states have, to 2 to 2.5 months. So that partying with the lobbyists and special interests will take place for the first up until spring break. They will then be after spring break, you know, they'll decide, you know, we need to start getting dialed in and start having hearings. My guess is probably the final 2 weeks, you know, they'll start looking at this, and then a lot of activity will take place. And we'll see, you know, that's when the fireworks. But here are the first couple of weeks. I think the Democrats are still very upset about the redistricting issue. So I think they're going to, you know, waste a lot of time on the Senate floor, which, I wish was televised. You could see what I have to deal with when I'm up on the Senate dais watching this stuff.
Yeah, it's true. Now, you've had a fairly good relationship with Governor Kehoe, it appears. He is pushing hard to eliminate the state income tax, and he, even though I haven't been able to get him on the air to talk about it, I'm guessing he'll unveil some more in his State of the State address next week. Is that realistic, and is it something you think the legislature can get done?
I do. So I had a call with me and the state with Governor Kehoe yesterday, or a lengthy telephone call yesterday morning. I was with Governor Kehoe last night. He's going to broach those topics of the State of the State address, and that would include, I don't think it's any secret, addressing the income tax. You know, a lot of the questions become, you know, how is that revenue going to be replaced? He asked me and the other statewide kind of keep a lid on it until the State of the State, but he will be addressing that on Tuesday. And again, that's another body. I'll be presiding over the State of the State address that will take place. I think it's at 3:00 on Tuesday. He'll reveal that. The budget will be unveiled at that time, but he will be addressing the issues relating to the state income tax.
Well, there are challenges, right? If you know, I had State Representative Richard West on earlier, and he said, as a representative of the people, we were talking about the personal property tax. I see it as one of my duties is to reduce taxes where I can, and not worry so much about levying new ones. But the budget is going to be impacted if we change the way we fund the government, because that's basically what you're talking about here, right?
Correct. And the other thing that we're dealing with, you know, timing's everything sometimes in politics. You know, the prior governor, he had all this COVID money, or the prior governor of every state. You know, they were finding money, way to spend it. I think 2022 to now, there was the Missouri budget increased by over $10 billion. There were over 3,400 line items added to the Missouri budget over the last 4 or 5 years.
Lots to
and
cut, in other
large
words.
Part because of that COVID money. So there, you know, there's a lot of ways to find a guy to put, you know, find some cuts. So there were a lot of additional line items added over the last. You know, these guys were spending money. I've seen these budget. You wouldn't believe the way the legislature was spending money over the last 3 or 4 years. It was insane.
Well, Mr. Lieutenant Governor, as the year rolls on here and we start focusing more and more on this Amendment 3, I know how involved you are in the issue of the right to life, and I'd love to have you on again to talk about that campaign.
Always a pleasure. I can't thank you enough, Mark and Kim. Congratulations on the new baby, Kim.
Thank you.
Happy New Year. That's a great way to spend the new year, too.
So,
I bet that was a fun Christmas.
It sure was.
All right, thanks. And watch me at noon. We'll be gaveling in the Senate.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll see you then. Thank you very much. Lieutenant Governor David Wassinger there. So I guess the House goes in at 10 this morning. The Senate comes in at noon, and the Lieutenant Governor will be up there with the gavel. Good to get that point of view from him this morning. Coming up, we'll talk to our friend Mary Vogt. She's a VP of Strategic Comms down at Heritage. We'll get her thoughts on the outrage over this Maduro situation, among other things. And then we've got State Senator Nick Schroer, who, of course, leads the Freedom Caucus down there in the state house. And I'm anxious to see what he thinks he might get accomplished this session. Back in just a minute. All right, welcome back to the show. You know, I've talked a lot about this Venezuela thing. It's been hard to ignore the last few days. Now, we'll just mention, I often refer you to the Daily Signal for a lot of different issues. But there, I just want to point out here before we get to our guest, a great article on there today from Victor Davis Hanson talking about Trump's foreign policy. and calling it Jacksonian. And if you don't really understand what that means, go read the article. Because there's so many people today accusing the president of being an interventionist and doing things he said he wasn't going to do when he campaigned, and I don't agree with any of that. I think it's an America First policy, but Victor Davis Hanson makes a great argument on that in the Daily Signal today. Right now, let's get to our friend Mary Vogt. She is a vice president of strategic comms at the Heritage Foundation. Good morning to you, Mary. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. Very much. Speaking of the Daily Signal, great article on there about a White House considering an executive action to prevent the government from taking kids away from parents who oppose gender transition. I've seen these nightmare stories before. How would this work?
Yes, it's a lot of individuals are really hopeful about this. Like you said, there's a great article by Elizabeth Mitchell. So basically, you've seen these stories, we know about them. A lot of parents who don't support, for many reasons, religious, science, and just plain old common sense, their children having these life-altering, very harmful procedures that would change their gender. And when parents oppose that, when schools want it or when leftist woke groups want it, they then call CPS on the parents. And there have been cases where individuals who were in red states where these procedures weren't allowed, the children then went to blue states to get the procedures, and CPS took the kids away from the parents, and the parents were not able to go after them in a different state. So like essentially kidnapping their children. And so, you know, they're still in the beginning works of this executive order, but it would just give parental rights back to the parents to be able to determine whether or not their children could have these life-altering surgeries, and it would prevent CPS from coming in and taking the children from them, which would be very welcome news for many parents.
A lot of people, naysayers, would say this wasn't actually happening. You know, the right sits there and tries to say that parents were actually having their kids taken away from them, but that was never really a thing. There are documented cases of this actually happening.
Absolutely. There are so many cases. There's families that have gone to court that are filing lawsuits that are trying to fight for their kids back. I mean, imagine having your kids ripped away from you while you're trying to protect them from doing this life-altering surgery, which will damage them for the rest of their lives. And we don't even really know the long-term effects of these procedures. They're getting pumped full of hormones and having body parts removed. I mean, it's absolutely a nightmare.
I think we covered a story about that. It seems like maybe it was in Montana.
That sounds right.
And then the kid was taken across state lines into Wyoming and placed in some center, and the parents weren't allowed to see, I believe it was a girl who identified as a boy, maybe is what it was. And because the parents wouldn't acknowledge it, CPS decided to move in and basically strip them of their parental rights.
Absolutely. There are so many cases of that. There's cases of individuals who have been divorced and one parent wants the child to have the procedure. They, like, even though they have shared or 50-50 custody, one parent takes them from the other parent can't get them, CPS gets involved, and then you're in this bureaucratic nightmare of an investigation trying to fight for the future of your child. So it's welcome news. A lot of parental rights groups want the administration to take action on this. They've seen the overreaching negative power that CPS has encroaching into these families. So we'll have to wait and see exactly what comes out in the executive order. But the fact that they're considering it, they're meeting with groups, and they're taking it seriously is really welcome news.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, again, a great article if you want to read that right there on the Daily Signal. DailySignal.com is a great place, a great clearinghouse for that. The other one, you know, I remember the reports of the outrage from certain United States members of Congress who were surveilled, apparently, without their knowledge by Jack Smith. Now we're finding out they were also doing this to individuals, correct? Like a Catholic school teacher?
Absolutely. So many individuals. And, you know, I understand that the senators were surveilled and, you know, they were frustrated with the Arctic Frost investigation, but United States senators are kind of a protected class. When you have this happening to everyday average Americans who can't really defend themselves or have the means or time to defend themselves in court, it's absolutely outrageous. There is a yeah, there's an article by Fred Lucas in the Daily Signal that talks about a Catholic school teacher who was surveilled for over 2 years for doing absolutely nothing. They assume that this individual had gone into the Capitol during January 6th, didn't do anything violent, didn't break any crimes. This individual actually didn't even do that. They didn't even go into the Capitol. And so this is a lot of the incidents that we've seen under the Biden administration, where they've completely weaponized the agencies and the federal government, where they didn't care about individuals' freedoms or individual rights or religious freedom, and instead just started targeting people based on their politics, which right. is absolutely frightening.
Well, and she was put on the domestic terrorist watch list, and you just worry that if a Democrat were to get in office, right, once Trump's mm-hmm. you know term is done, is this stuff going to start happening again?
Exactly. And to be on that list, it's absolutely life altering. I mean, no, you can't get a security clearance. You have issues when you fly. If you're trying to adopt a child or have any form of a background check, it's going to flag because of that. And so you're ruining the future of an individual's lives for absolutely nothing based on her politics and her religion. And so you're right. That is definitely a fear that we have of other, you know, of if the Democrats take control again, of them using the power of the federal government to weaponize against their political opponents.
Sure.
It's absolutely frightening.
And Mary, they promised to go after ICE agents. I heard that the other day. I heard one of the congressmen or senators saying, if we get back in power, we're documenting these situations so we can go after federal agents who are doing their jobs. And that it's a frightening proposition. Hopefully one people are paying attention to.
Absolutely. I mean, those individuals are the ones running into harm's way to protect our country and our communities, and they're being targeted for it. And meanwhile, we have the Democrats defending a narco-terrorist in Madero, you know, and they're defending gangsters and, you know, the cartel for what they say immigration rights, which is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I would agree. Mary Vogt, Vice President of Strategic Comms for the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk soon. Good to get you on here this morning. Coming up, the man with the beard, Nick Schroer, Missouri State Senator from out in St. Charles County. And he's going to talk to us about what he thinks might happen when the Senate gavels in today around noon. We'll be right back. How about that? About 4 hours away or so from the gaveling in of the Missouri Senate for the session. You heard the Lieutenant Governor David Wassinger on with us a bit earlier. If you missed that, you can always go back and pick up the podcast on the Odyssey app or 971talk.com, wherever you download your podcast. The Lieutenant Governor is worried that, as usual, it's business as usual in Jeff City again, where a lot of the power brokers and the lobbyists pull the strings down there, and you get to the end of the session and maybe 10 or 15 things have gotten done out of the hundreds of bills that are pre-filed when that opens in December. So we've got Senator Nick Schroer on the line with us, of course, head of the Freedom Caucus down there. Nick, good morning to you.
Yeah, thank you for thanks for having me on.
You bet, man. So are you excited for getting things underway this afternoon?
I am, and it's kind of that feeling if any of the listeners have played sports or going into a big game. It's kind of that feeling, you know, I played college football, high school football, and sometimes you just got to play that smash mouth, pop them right in the mouth football. And yeah, I do fear that there is a mentality and a feeling of a lot of the lobbyists, the special interest groups, wanting that same behavior, the business as usual, like David Wassinger was talking about. But thanks to the Freedom Caucus, we had one of the most successful years last year. And I think now with all of the talk about cutting taxes and school choice and cutting spending, that's something that I've been saying for a very long time. I think 2026 is poised to be one of the most successful years that we could have as a Republican supermajority.
Well, you know, you showed something by being willing to bring up the PQ last year. The Lieutenant Governor said this. I saw it mentioned in several press reports that the Democrats are particularly peeved about that, and they could try to slow down the system because they're angry that the supermajority used its power to get some stuff done.
Yeah, I think the Democrats are always a little bit crabby and cranky in the state of Missouri because we're refusing to allow them to turn it into a socialist cesspool, so to speak. So, yeah, I saw some of the Democrats last night, some from the Missouri Senate and the Missouri House. A lot of people are in and out of the building last night and this morning getting ready. And there's a weird vibe within the Democrat Party because not a lot of people were reporting on this. During the interim, there was a move for the minority leader, Doug Beck, to get ousted out by the other Democrats. And Stephen Weber was one who everybody thought was going to be the new Democrat minority leader. And the infighting within the Democrats, people stabbing each other in the back, that's caused some division. So not a lot of people are talking about the qualms within the Missouri Democrat Party. So that's another thing to keep your eye on as we're trying to put a lot of the power back in the hands of the people this session.
All right. You mentioned school choice. That's a big one for me. We've moved the ball in that direction, right, with some of the tax credits and people being able to utilize those. But, man, I want a school voucher where people yeah. can have the freedom who are tied down, let's say, in the city of St. Louis, can't afford to move. They can take the money that would have been spent there and send their kid to Ladue if they want.
Yeah, I agree 100%. If we're going to move the state in a direction that's competing with, and I hate to say it because we always used to make fun of Arkansas Kansas when we were growing up. But look, Arkansas and Tennessee and Texas and Florida, you look at this U-Haul report of where people are moving to, and it's states with zero income tax, states with zero personal property tax, states with school choice. And I've got a bill that would allow a tax offset for tuition. It is a form of a voucher. It's not, you know, titled as such, but you're still allowing the public school to receive the funding up front. But then you take that funding and say, look, I had to spend it on a private school or homeschooling or whatever it may be. And you get a tax write-off. So it's not costing you more to pay for a failing school and then the appropriate education for your kid. We absolutely have to have school choice done in the state of Missouri. Last night, I had a conversation with the Speaker of the House. He agrees. I had a conversation earlier with Governor Mike Kehoe. He agrees. So let's stop talking and get to work.
Going back to this whole idea of getting rid of the state income tax, personal property tax, obviously I'm a big proponent of that. But you hear a lot of the lawmakers say, well, if we get rid of that, then we have to understandably make up the revenue. And so we'll just kind of shift the taxes over here. Now, I wanted to get your response to something that one of the listeners messaged us on our text line saying, why is it that politicians never talk about decreasing spending? They just talk about shifting taxes from one type of tax to another. Because, Nick, I think about, you know, DOGE and how much wasteful spending they were able to cut on the federal level. Certainly that has to exist on the local level.
Yeah, I know the state of Missouri, we've got two different committees in the House and the Senate that are similar to DOGE. But that listener should probably go and subscribe to my social media pages because I've been talking about cutting spending for a very long time. That's one of the reasons the Missouri Freedom Caucus was formed in the first place is because we're spending too much of the people's money. And I've got several different bills. I've got a bill to phase out Missouri income tax. I've got a bill that would go onto the ballot for voters to vote and get rid of personal property tax. But neither one of them are replacing this so-called revenue. Neither one of them are dipping back into the people's pockets to give government more money. And the reason being, the government should operate like all of us and our families and our businesses. And when you have less revenue coming in, you've got to prioritize where the money's going out. And when it comes to government, I see it every single year in the budget. And it's one of the reasons I vote and try to strip pieces out of the budget is that we are using government money in the public sector to fund all of these things that the private sector should be stepping up to the plate and funding museums and all of these other little special pet projects in certain districts. And I heard in a conversation earlier with Governor Mike Kehoe, he said we're going to learn more on the 13th. He's around the building this morning, one of the only governors I've ever served under to work the halls and start talking to people on opening day. But he even said, look, we've got to cut spending. We've got to cut the budget back. You know, we'll see on the 13th where his vision is, but politicians need to absolutely start moving into that direction rather than saying we've got to make up the revenue. No, we've got to return this money back to the people and start spending it wiser and cutting a lot of where we previously were spending.
I know you've got high hopes that we get a few key accomplishments done this year. Lieutenant Governor was lamenting the fact that it's a long session, maybe longer than any of the other part-time legislatures in the country. He would like to see it shortened. He said nothing's going to get done between now and their spring break, and then everything gets crammed into the last few weeks of the session. You agree with that?
It really depends on the session. There are some sessions where, like in 2019, when I did my heartbeat bill, a lot of that work was done on the House side, and the Senate side, when they came back from spring break, it was all teed up and ready to go. Even last year, we saw the fix for Amendment 3 that was done on the very last day of session. That work, I'm going to tell you right now, that work from the Freedom Caucus, we met the very first day of session with leadership in the Missouri Senate to kind of outline the moves that we have to make and the bill having to come over from the House. So it really depends on the session. If the Democrats are going to start out coming through on their promise of killing everything and filibustering until the session is ended, then yeah, you're going to see the Missouri House moving at lightning speed to get certain things over to the Missouri Senate. So I think it's really going to depend on what the Democrats do coming out of the gate. Are they going to be the obstructionists that they have been, that, you know, you never hear the media reporting on? Or are they going to sit down and actually try to move and work with the people of Missouri, the supermajority Republican Party that the people of Missouri have voted in?
That's a good point. State Senator Nick Schroer with us. Any indication that people like, Missouri Freedom Caucus members might lose access to their parking or have their furniture taken away for any reason this year?
Well, yeah, that was a couple years ago, right when we were brand new, and I was a brand new freshman legislator. They couldn't move my parking spot because it was the worst one in the garage out there. But yeah, they threatened to take our furniture. They took away chairmanships. But as of right now, it's looking real good. I'm the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, one of the most powerful committees over here in the Senate. We got a lot of work done with the governor last year. It's a night and day difference from getting our parking spots and chairmanships taken away. And even our bills. Our bills were stripped from us and given to other members that were non-Freedom Caucus. In just this past year, the first, the last, and many of the bills that Governor Kehoe had on his desk were Freedom Caucus bills. So I think the establishment sees the writing on the wall that the people of Missouri are sick and tired of the spineless approach, the George Bush era Republicans, and they want fighters. And a lot of these fighters, my good friend Jim Avery is running for Missouri Senate, and he's got a lot of people behind him because he's got the cojones to stand up and say, look, we got to start doing what the people want and not special interests.
Yeah, it's a good point. I hope we get to more of that. You still have that baseball bat framed up on your office wall down there?
It's right next to my window now. You'll have to come down and look at it. Our good friend Rick Pogue was one who made that. One
okay.
of the companies made that for me. Because I said this place when I came in here in 2017 was a lot like The Walking Dead. You've got zombies just taking orders. And I kind of feel like Negan sometimes that, yeah, sometimes I got to slash the budget and I'm the bad guy. But when you truly look at these positions of the Freedom Caucus, that returning the power to the people, cutting spending, cutting money, the establishment is going to get a little upset about that. But when you go back home and start talking to the people that sent you here, the true people that you're working for, they really want that approach.
I would agree. Nick Schroer, keep up the good work, my friend. Good luck.
Absolutely. God bless you all.
Yep. We'll talk soon. State Senator Nick Schroer. Yeah, he's got a framed Lucille baseball bat with the barbed wire wrapped around the end of it, framed in a box or hanging up on his wall. I think it's framed in a box, hanging up on his when you walk in. He's got it right by his window.
We need to, just in case
any zombies wake up down in the state house.
We need to get him a flamethrower and we could put it in one of those shadow boxes.
I'm sure he's got one
for his office.
I know he and Igel both have a flamethrower. I've seen him use it before, famously.
That would be a funny gift.
All right, coming up, we'll get to Kim on a Whim. What are we talking about?
You know, sometimes there are those stories you're listening to in the car and they stop you dead in your tracks because you're so dumbfounded about them. This morning that happened on my way into the studio. We're talking COVID era, like isolation, quarantining. My goodness, I'll explain on the other side of the break.
Kim on a Whim.
And a measles outbreak in South Carolina. Multiple people have been hospitalized. More than 200 cases have been reported, spreading mainly through elementary schools and churches. So far, at least 140 people are in quarantine, and at least 7 more are in isolation as the folks in South Carolina struggle to contain the outbreak.
I'm listening to that in my car this morning on my way into the studio, and let me just play the scenario out for you. So I hear him say, as of Tuesday, 144 people are in quarantine, and 7 more people are in isolation. And most of these measles cases are children, okay? 45 yeah. involve children under 5. 143 involve children ages 5 to 17. I said, what it was one of those moments. I couldn't believe it. Are we going back to the year 2020, COVID, where everyone's expected to quarantine? I get if you have measles, you're not going to run around and go hugging everybody else. However, that wasn't always the case, because the Brady Bunch even proved that.
A slight temperature, a lot of dots, and a great big smile.
A great big smile?
No school for a few days.
Boy, this is the life, isn't it?
Yeah. If you have to get sick, sure can't beat the measles.
Okay, well, now how things have changed, right? Because now you're expected to be in isolation, and they act like you have the bubonic plague if you have the measles. Just like anything, there are cases that are extreme. There are cases that can make you incredibly sick and can send you to the hospital. It's just like the flu. It's just like anything else, okay? But the vast majority of the cases are not that way. And so when you hear these reports of, you know, whoa, be careful,
blowing
measles,
it out
measles
proportion,
outbreak,
right.
And they're talking about how everyone has to be in isolation, it's fear-mongering, and it drives me nuts when I hear that they're going into this and how quickly these health officials are recommending masks again. Anytime you get sick or you have the slightest cough, or
it's highly contagious, Kim,
you should wear a mask again. I heard it the other day. There was some health official on a radio station that was saying, if you feel at all sick, especially if you're traveling in an airport this holiday season, you should mask up. Give me a break. I'm not wearing a diaper on my face again. Those were ineffective back in 2020. Newsflash, 5 years later, almost 6 years later, they're still ineffective. Nothing
we'll get,
has changed.
We'll get you an H95 mask.
No, someone corrected us. It's N95.
N95 mask.
We could not figure that out. Yes, thank
earlier.
You, Richie.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Yeah, the article on this makes very clear that vaccination status is unclear, correct?
It's unclear.
That the vaccination, so it's mostly children. It stemmed from a family gathering in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And then some of those family members went back to their home in near Asheville in Buncombe County. Most of this is mostly isolated to the upstate. And then apparently some of those kids went to church. And then it spread through the church a little bit. So what they won't talk about is whether or not they were vaccinated or not. If you're vaccinated against it, it's 97% effective against measles and an 86% effective against mumps.
I don't like the MMR vaccine for many reasons, but I don't really even buy that statistic, to be honest with you. But I mean, I'm just so sick and tired of everybody acting like this is the plague and that everyone needs to, like, go into hiding for 3 weeks And these young children, what do you suppose? I bet you that some parents are so deathly afraid of their own child when they have the measles that they're putting them in a bedroom and like a prison cell. They're putting the little tray outside their door and saying, here's your food, my 5-year-old child. Eat it in your room. Stay in your room and don't come out because you have the measles.
If you've been vaccinated and you have faith in the vaccination, why would you worry about that? Only like COVID, if you have an underlying health condition of some other sort, would you have the extended risk of death from this? I mean, it's pretty rare. And like you said, it used to be so much more common. I love that you played that Brady Bunch clip when they used to have chicken pox parties or whatever. Let's just get it out of the way right now, and then you don't have to worry about it again. But you're right. They're trying to spark fear in people by worrying about this so much. If you've been vaccinated and you believe in that, you shouldn't have anything to worry about. Right?
Natural immunity is not enough these days.
Apparently not. It isn't. That's a fascinating story, and you'll continue to hear all the mainstream media focusing on it over the next few days. Next hour, we're going to talk to the man of the hour. He's going to be here at the end of the month. Jimmy Failla is going to join us from Fox Across America, and Senator Eric Schmidt making an appearance at about 8:35 this morning. We'll talk about what's going on up in Snohomish and
Get more at 971talk.com.